to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. I'm here.
You are, and unfortunately, I don't think the stream actually got to see, but we did have a new little Murphy addition who joined us earlier. She was up on screen very briefly. She is adorable and tiny. We officially have a new Murphy in the world. Ryan, why don't you tell us a little bit about Abigail?
Yeah, so last week, Abigail was born on Tuesday. So since Tuesday, I've been keeping a small being, two small beings, I guess, alive now. There's two of them running around.
Yeah.
But not running
twice
around.
It's hard.
Abigail's pretty easy. You just leave her in a corner. She doesn't move. It's perfect. Caden, on the other hand, he is a rocket. And no, Abigail was born on Tuesday, and she's doing very well, and so is mom. Ashley's doing really well. And yeah, we're just sort of trying to get into a routine. Obviously, I just got home from the hospital when you guys wrapped last week's episode, so there was no way I was going to be there. Even just, you know, I took a week off. I said, you know what? I know it sucks, but I'm going to do it. Josh did a fantastic job. You guys covered Gamescom really great. And I'm happy to be back, and I'm happy to report that we're starting to get back into a routine. And
good.
It's good. You know, obviously being the guy, it's not, you know, you're not involved as
not
much.
As dramatic, yeah.
You know, you know, Ashley still has a very normal life, and we're doing great. And again,
mothers can have normal lives.
It's true. I just want everyone to understand. It's like, it's not like she's like, you know, playing video games and that hasn't changed. That would be actually really weird. It's like, okay, what happened here? But no, she's just been having a great time and doing a great job. And she's amazing for being able to kind of handle everything that's come across her, especially just with the new baby. And I'm trying to help out as best I can. I'm not trying to say like, look, I'm just like putting the baby in a corner and playing video games.
Play video games. Oh, come on, Ryan. We know that that's what it is. I'm surprised you not only started a new game on your Switch, but you also finished Horizon finally. So
I have 2 weeks
you
off.
You say you're not, you know, putting the baby in a corner and just playing video games, but I think all evidence to the contrary.
Well, babies sleep a lot, let's be honest. And when they wake up, they either want their diaper changed or they want to be fed. And I can only do one of those things. Some would say none of those things, but I would say at least one. But no, I have been playing a lot of video games just because I have had more time or wait time as I'm kind of keeping Ashley company as she's feeding the baby, or, you know, just being prepared to wake up at a moment's notice. It's easier to wake up, little known fact, easier to wake up at a moment's notice when you're already awake. Just throwing it out there, everybody. Life hack.
That's true.
Life hack. I'm kidding, by the way.
So let's dive into Horizon really quickly.
Sure.
I know this is probably not necessarily the least interesting, but definitely the one we've been talking the most about. The other two games that we have to talk about this week are brand new. Mm-hmm. So really quickly, do you want to give just your kind of final thoughts on Horizon? I'm interested to see what you think, because I don't know yet what you think about the overall story. And so anyone who's listening, obviously we have Endgame Horizon spoilers coming probably for the next 10 minutes or so. So feel free to skip ahead. I will try to put an annotation in the YouTube video for you.
Yeah, so 10 minutes of spoiler goodness. So anyways, Horizon, I finished it. This is obviously, you know, a little bit of recap, something that Jocelyn played a lot of when it launched and into March, and there was a bunch of episodes devoted to it. And now, due to the fact that I'm playing it, we've had multiple episodes where we talk about it again. So I will say up front, this is the last time we're going to talk about Horizon until the expansion comes out in November, and I promise you that both of us will be playing it, so we only have to talk about it once. But you know what? It's our show. We're going to talk about it. So Horizon, spoilers incoming. I beat the game.
Yay!
When I texted you, I said I was in the final answer dungeon. That's what I've been calling them, because every time you go in, they give you a bunch of answers. Mm-hmm. Then I promptly realized that I was at the point of no return, and I wanted to get the best ending, quote unquote, which is just a trophy, where you have all your allies with you.
It's just a trophy, but it is literally the first game I've ever gotten 100% on, so...
Yeah, that is quite the task. I will say that I beat the game, quote unquote, but I'm not going to probably have, I'm not even close to 100%. I think I'm like at 70.
Well, and they added new trophies too since I beat it. So I have to go back and try to do it again. I think they added difficulty trophies, which they didn't have originally. And I feel like there's, or There's some sort of like challenge mode or something.
I think there's new game plus and then like super hard mode that you
can
play.
That whatever that plus is, I haven't done that.
Yeah, I'm not really going to go for a platinum, but I am excited that I've been reading a little bit about the expansion, and there's talk that maybe that expansion will not only take you to a new area, but also give you reason to stick around in the old world, which would be nice, because I haven't experienced a lot of it. As I was trying to clean up the side quests that a handy-dandy website told me I needed to finish for the All Allies Join the Final Battle trophy, I was going to places that I had not been before, which it kind of illustrates how large this world is, especially when you're not... when you're just following the linear path. So having beat the game, experienced all the story, I will say that one point that you brought up in March was that they answer some questions as the game progresses, but they're always laying new questions at your feet. Like, here's an answer, but here's two more questions for you to like figure out. And by the end of the game, I feel like there's only one question remaining before the post-credit scene. And then there's two questions remaining after the post-credit scene. Because honestly, there's that post-credit scene at the end where, and now we're going to start spoilers for reals, where Silence just says, like, I got to go back to my home planet. And then he just goes, burp, 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 and he disappears. And then if you just lop off that post-credit scene, it's not needed. It didn't need to be there in the context of the game's ending was final. And we go back to the issue I had with Andromeda, where if you have a you know, solid game that you enjoyed, but it didn't do too well, and they drop it like a hot potato and say, nah, you're not going to get more story here. You set yourself up for that, like, really massive disappointment. Now, we all know that Horizon did really well. It sold well. There's going to be sequels. There's going to be DLC. We will get our answers. We're not going to have to read some stupid, you know, multiplayer dialogue thing. we're going to get it. So this is what I'm saying is, like, if you chop that post-credit scene, it just seemed a little tacked on. Like, it wasn't really needed. It didn't ruin the game for me, but it was kind of like a... It's like, of course, this just feels a little sequelitis, but it's kind of what every game does. What every movie does, what every book does.
Yeah, I kind of felt like that post-credit scene... Mm-hmm. Could have potentially gone both ways. Like, I think it's a really good jumping off point for a potential sequel, but I think they could have gone a whole lot of different ways. That you could have even done like a prequel or something in some way, shape, or form. There's just so much in that game universe and so much time that's kind of passed that it would be totally fine if the game sold really well. They could have taken it in a whole bunch of different directions. So I don't really think that they would have to go that way with a sequel, but I mean, you're right, it does. This is one possible direction they could take with a sequel, and it is a good jumping off point. But I also think it works, and it's been like since March when I actually saw the scene, so I can't remember my kind of initial thoughts on it, but I think that it could also act as a, you know, just kind of wrapping up of things, you know what I mean? Like, it was kind of like, it doesn't necessarily have to be the springboard for a sequel. I would have been just as happy if there was no sequel, just because it's like the two characters that you're kind of sort of wondering about, it's like,
are now together, right?
Yeah, exactly. They're showing us what happened to them, because we kind of just got a they're just leaving ending, which I feel like was a little bit not that satisfying given what we knew specifically about Silence's character.
Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, having him still attempting to find everything he could possibly find and, you know, keep on digging, I feel like that was actually a better ending to his character than just saying, okay, I'm leaving now, bye.
Yeah, no, that is a valid point. And I agree with you there. When you explain it that way, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, I guess it would have been worse if he... But I felt like he had served his purpose. Like, when he left, it was kind of
well,
like...
Well, yeah, like I say, it could have gone either way with that end scene. Yeah. Like, you could look at it as just kind of wrapping up, like, what he's doing and making it so it's like, oh, there's still a little bit of a threat out there. Like, this isn't just, you know, the happy tie-up-all-ends ending. So I found it interesting from that point of view. But you're right, it definitely is a great sequel jumping-off point, and I think that's what it was meant as.
And it doesn't even need, like you said, it doesn't need to be the sequel. So basically, I think the post-credit, like, shows the weird eyeball, which was Hades, which is the mm-hmm. subroutine of Gaia, which is the supercomputer that restarts Earth. Really cool setup. Never read or seen anything like this before. Completely unique.
That's how I felt too, dude. Yeah. That's why I love this game so much. Like, the mm-hmm. further I delved in, I'm so glad I can finally talk about this with you, because like, honestly, the whole concept of the game was just so freaking well done. And it was like a sci-fi story like I'd never experienced before. And I'm sure, because there is like, it's so hard in sci-fi and fantasy to actually do something that's 100% original. So I'm sure it's derivative of something. But for me, I had never seen a story like that before. So I was just like so blown away. The more of it that they revealed to me, the more they revealed to me the whole like Project Zero Dawn and what all that was. And, you know, like, the lives of the people, like, I don't know how many of the diaries that you found, but
all the audio logs except for one, which probably was an early one that I missed, but the, like, all the lives of the alphas, the people that mm-hmm. that Elizabeth Sobeck or whatever had recruited into this program, and, you know, the way that progressed, and you kind of figure, like, oh, this is going to progress to a way where they just, like, they lived happily ever after in a dungeon. No, they go a little further and they say, this is what you expect to see. You know, they, mm-hmm. they had planned everything, but no, nothing goes right because it is this rushed thing and this rushed extinction, you know, measure where they're trying to fix the Earth. And it turns out it's like, nah, the guy who did it feels really guilty, so guilty that he's gone insane and now he's going to kill everybody and then mm-hmm. sabotage, you know, one of the biggest portions and time spent on this Gaia protocol, which is Apollo, mm-hmm. which was all the collected knowledge of, you know, the old world. And it's crazy that they designed this whole world, this whole unique world and this unique setup for a new world, but then also don't go down the sci-fi tropes of just everything working out okay, because we knew,
right?
We knew that the old world was going to completely die out. They didn't, mm-hmm. you know, cryogenically freeze anybody. They weren't allowed to, you know, clone anyone.
All we really knew was mm-hmm. that somehow someone survived, because there are humans on the new world, right? Yeah. So we knew that that was the only tie, is that somehow at least two people had to live and somehow repopulate humans. Yeah. And so that's what we thought going in, right? Is like, okay, there are humans on this planet, so small pockets must have survived somehow. And they totally throw that in our faces. And they're just like, no, they don't. No,
they're all dead.
Technology. Everyone dies. How do you like that?
And the way
wait, what?
Exactly. The way they sort of set that all up with Gaia and the submarines, and they walk you through it piece by piece and sprinkle it in throughout the gameplay, you're allowed to digest it. And you're allowed to enjoy the quiet moments where you're listening to the dialogues and the diaries that give you more of that insight. And I just, you know, beginning to end, that story is going to be really tough to hit, because I'd say probably 80% of the mystery has been solved. You know, the mm-hmm. remaining portions, which are, some would say, are the most interesting, are, why did Hades get kickstarted 19 years ago or whatever? Why did mm-hmm. Hades throw a fit and kill Gaia or make Gaia have to self-destruct? And, you know, who did it, you know, and that's something that Silence asks at the end of the game. And I think that's where I don't feel like Hades is, you know, is a threat, because it seems to me like he's been, quote unquote, captured by Silence. And Silence is going to be like, he's not going to let him out, because he knows what he's capable of, or it is capable mm-hmm. of. He's just looking for answers.
Yeah, and the thing that I loved so much about the villain is basically that, like, the villain is a computer that's executing its code. Like, it is supposed to destroy all life on Earth if life on Earth is not basically perfect, right? So if he thinks that life on Earth is going to fail through his observations, then he's just going to be like, okay, we're, like... this failed, so, or is, you know, projected to fail, or whatever computer thing, so now I just need to wipe it and start over. Mm-hmm. Wipe it and start over. Like, that's what he's meant to do. This isn't anything, like, there's no personal vendetta. This isn't like, oh yeah, I hate humans, grr, arg. It's like, beep boop, beep boop, this is what I was programmed to do. Yeah. Like, and which I kind of loved, because from a, like, outsider perspective, as Aloy, you're just like, oh my god, this thing is big and evil, it's the devil, it hates us all. It's just like, no, it's actually just a computer.
It's just doing its job.
it's just doing its job.
The final battle was a little Arita-y. It's one of those things where games don't do bosses very well, or sometimes, you know, it's hard to do boss battles. And I felt like the final boss battle didn't utilize a lot of, you know, the open environments. It was just like, it was a giant coliseum, and the guy would slowly move around, and I died a couple times, so it wasn't easy, but it just felt, you know, not as unique or as smart as the other engagements in the game. But other than that, I felt like that ending was nearly perfect.
I felt the whole story, I mean, the game had its flaws, and I'm not going to say that it's a perfect video game, but I think the story as a whole was so well executed. And like you mentioned even earlier on in the show, is that it had, like, it just, the plot kept opening up, if that's the best way for me to describe it. It's like, you think that you know what the story is going to be, and you want to find the answer to, like, one thing, like, why was Aloy exiled, is like the first thing. You're just like, I need to figure this out. This is the game, figuring out how I fit into this clan. That's the game. This is my little valley. That's the map. And then all of a sudden it opens up, and it's just like, oh no, it's not just your little valley. Like, now you get to go these places, and really, why Aloy's exiled? Not really that important right now, because what we need to do is deal with the corrupted machines, and that's the big story. Mm-hmm. And then you get to the tower, and the whole story opens up even further, and it just keeps opening up to you and keeps, like, answering questions, but then leaving you with, like, three more. And you're just kind of like, man, it was very perfectly executed from my point of view, anyway, as playing through a game. The pacing of it was amazing.
Yeah, the story, again, probably one of my favorite stories in video games this year. And there hasn't been a lot of great stories this year. There's been a few, and some of which I enjoyed a little more than others did, but in terms of great stories, I think that Horizon is up there. And again, my only concern is, how do you, I'm looking forward to seeing how they continue it and build on this mystery, because I really feel like they've explored 80% of that mystery, which made the game so interesting to me. So it'll be really cool to see whether they, I'm sure in the expansion they'll sprinkle in a little more, maybe cover like another 10%, but they will double down probably on the Banuk tribe and that area. And I think that's something that they can focus on, and they're probably going to experiment with this expansion coming out in November, is rather than telling the story or solving the mystery, telling that story, we can tell the story of this recreated area, you know, like what makes it unique, what happened here during the great, you know, extinction phase, and how is it rebuilt, and what's unique about it. Like, focusing in on that and explaining a little more of the mystery might be a great way to extend the life a little bit, but I think they're going to have a hard time. Actually, I'm just really curious to see what they do to take the rest of that 20% and hopefully don't milk it, but, like, spread it out into a nice, even sequel that feels as good as this one.
I do know, like, I remember feeling very similar to you when I finished Horizon. It's like, I wanted more of Horizon, but I don't know how they're going to give me, because what I thought was amazing was the way that the story felt like it was something that could really happen. It felt near future, which is how I like my sci-fi, and by that I mean, like, the events that caused the extinction were really easy to wrap my head around. You could see it as something that actually happened. I'm not necessarily talking about, you know, the robot dinosaurs as being super, you know, obvious, but I could see how that kind of, all of the steps that they took that caused the apocalypse, I can see that happening now, which makes it, it's like a touchstone. It's very real and very cool. And finding out exactly what happened and what humanity did and how all that stuff worked was what drove the story for me and what I thought was so cool in the end. So it's going to be difficult, I think, to recreate that in a sequel. But like I said, the universe is also really big, so who knows what they're going to come up with. But I'm looking forward to it. I think that was probably longer than 10 minutes.
It was. Sorry, folks.
Guys, I promise I'll go and tag in the YouTube video for you. So you should be coming back into it right about now, when we're going to talk about the trash pile garbage fire that is Life is Strange.
Oh, thank God. I feel like this is going to be a tough episode. Yeah. Let's hear about this is the Life is Strange prequel, and I'm going to let you finish, but I'm kind of anticipating that one of the things we hated, you hated and I strongly disliked about Life is Strange was just the teenagey, angsty teenage. I feel like this is a simulator that I need to play in like 10 to 12 years. Am I hitting the nail on the head here?
Yeah, dude, okay, so first of all, I almost didn't make it through not even the opening scene that leads into the kind of opening credits.
Wow.
Because it's that, like, it's gotta be, I don't know, 10 or 15 minutes of gameplay probably, and it's like this introducing you to Chloe's character, and I liked Chloe even less than I liked Max, so mm-hmm. that's kind of saying something in the original Life is Strange. And the thing that made the original Life is Strange really cool was the time travel mechanic. But that was Max's power. That wasn't Chloe's power. Want to guess what Chloe's power is, Ryan?
Is it angst?
It's being a gigantic bitch.
Ooh, okay.
So basically her power is arguing. And you get into a conversation with the bouncer and you have to listen to what he says and then pick the same words from the conversation options as you're having a fight with him to, like, rebuke his arguments. And if you do it right, you progress the game.
Wait, so you're telling me it's just a dialogue tree? That's
basically, yes.
It's an adventure game. That which
I'm not
it was
even
before.
100% sure if you can fail because it's really obvious. Like, at one point, she's talking about, or like, he calls her a kid or something, and then one of the dialogue options is about a playground. And so, it, like, some of them are literally exactly, like, he says something about his boss, and then you have to pick the option that has the word boss in it, and then some of them are, like, word association, like kid with playground. That's how you build your arguments. Like, it's super complex. I roll.
Oh, okay. So past the teenage angst thing, what's the story?
She's a terrible character. She's super, super angsty.
Yeah, you didn't like her. You didn't like her to begin with.
I didn't like her anyway. Yeah.
And that's the crazy part is that, like, now this game doesn't have the same voice actress as the previous one, but it is Alloy, right?
Yeah, but it was more jarring than I thought it was going to be because, yeah, Chloe doesn't sound like Chloe.
No, it's a new voice actress.
Which is really weird. Yeah. But so basically it's a prequel. So you're going back in time a couple of years to when Chloe first meets Rachel. Rachel is the girl who's missing at the beginning of the original Life is Strange. So you're basically seeing how their friendship starts. And that's fine, except that for Chloe to be the main character, she's just a little bit much. It's like a year after her dad died and her mom is dating this new guy. So she's all like, yay, dad, boo, boyfriend.
Is she dating the guy from the first game or a different guy?
The mom is dating the guy that she ends up marrying, the security guard with the mustache.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
I didn't like him either.
No, I didn't like him either as well. No. I don't like Chloe. I don't like her mom. I don't like the mom's boyfriend. It's just like it's like they took all of the worst characters from the original Life is Strange and said, hey, let's do a game about these guys.
Life is Strange was a balance between a really cool mechanic, some okay characters, and some just really shitty. Don't get me wrong. Teenagers, if you're listening, this is not me throwing your entire age group under the bus, but some of you can be a little Chloe. Like, let's be honest. This is not like they created something new for this video game. People actually are like this. And I get it. Like, they're, oh, this is how I feel, like that sort of thing. But I'm wondering, like, who is this for then if fans of the original game can't play this one?
Like, I honestly don't know. So I have not finished episode one. I gave it as good a shot as I possibly could. I gave up at the point where Chloe is about to get a ride to school from the mom's boyfriend. And I was like, I can't. I don't want to. This is not an interaction / scene that I want to work my way through. So I'm just going to take a break now and walk away. Otherwise, I'm just I might never, to be honest, I might never come back to this game. But it's just like I said, the mechanic from the first game that was super cool was the time travel. And you don't have that now. And the only Chloe mechanic that they have introduced, like I said, is this whole argument tree thing, which basically is like there's dots along the bottom and there's a goal in the middle, and you have to get you have to basically make 4 points in your, or I guess 5 points in your argument before your opposing person gets their 5 points. So you have to throw them off balance. But my big problem with this is basically it's just be a bitch. I walked into the first little room thing that you get into after you get past the bouncer. So this total old dive bar thing. And it's I knew exactly what to do because I thought, okay, if the whole entire point of this game is to be a bitch, I'm just going to take the bitchiest options. And even when it popped up and said, this action will have consequences, I was like, yeah, okay. And it turns out it did have consequences and they were good for me because being a horrible bitch is the mechanic of the game. This is so dumb.
Ouch.
So it's it wasn't even you basically, I feel at least with Max, there was a little bit of flexibility with her character, but where Chloe was a supporting character in the first game, you already know what her personality is supposed to be, or at least what the developers want her personality to be. So, almost the best ways to get through the conversations without even really having to pay attention or play the game. You can just pick the bitchiest option and you get the best outcome, which I feel is just a terrible mechanic. You can't necessarily play how you want to play. You play how you think the developers want you to play, and that's the way to go, and that's being super bitchy. And so I just, between the super bitchy Chloe and the teen angst and the, I was like, okay, I can't. Guys, I'm sorry. I love you gamers in, guys, but I don't think I can finish this for you. I'm sorry.
I think that what made Life is Strange the original adventure game we played we weren't over the moon about it. We played beginning to end, but we only hit some rocky roads there near the.
I feel the first episode or two of the previous Life is Strange we both really liked, but then it took a turn pretty quickly and went some weird places.
Yeah, but I guess the best part about the original one was that the character you're playing, Max, she was a little more reserved, but also kind of absorbed a lot of the characters around her. So when she was with Chloe, you could feel like you could choose the more bold option because you were with your friend and you're a little, you absorb a little bit of her personality. But with Chloe, and I don't even think you're just picking things because I haven't played the game, but I probably can guess that you're picking those options because that's just how Chloe is. If you tried to play Chloe and say oh, I'm going to be really apologetic here, that doesn't fly. She never once apologized.
Right, exactly. There are options at some points where you could possibly apologize. And I tried doing it once and it basically kicked me out of the conversation. It was the whole point is you're supposed to be this badass bitch. And if you aren't, Josh in the chat room is saying it would be really funny if you replaced the word bitch in this episode with something like bunny. So sure. You have to be a big giant bunny in order to.
Now, will he go back and change that to bitch? Is that what?
Yeah.
Okay. So I get the impression. Yeah, you did not like the game. I don't think I'm going to pick it up because that was one of my concerns is that.
Yeah.
It will feature.
I don't know who I could recommend this to, but I feel like no one.
Yeah, which is
even you. And I know you like adventure games, and I know you were kind of on the positive side of The Last Life is Strange. So I feel like this would have been, if they were marketing to anyone, it would be you. But without a cool mechanic.
Because I'm a boss ass bitch. Is that what you're saying?
You're a badass bitch. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I think that, I'm not into playing games where your character is just an asshole. The great thing about Max was that she could be, you know, mm-hmm. an asshole when it made sense. You know, when there was a moment where you had to stick up for a friend, or you had to save someone, or stop someone from doing something, or hell, even involving, you know, the solving of a murder. You know, your character could move around. You felt like you could make choices, but because this is a prequel, and because it's Chloe, she's very one dimensional. She's angry at the world, and she's going to be angry at the world throughout the entire game. And knowing the ending of this game, I don't think there's going to be many moments where she's not going to be angry at the world, and maybe. The only moment where you would kind of play not angry or bitchy is when you're with Rachel. So did you get to any points in the game where you were surrounded by a character where I think would be the only time that Chloe is a good person? Has that happened?
I have met Rachel. So basically the pre-credit scene is Chloe meeting Rachel and where that happens and how that happens. And then the only time after that, because like I said, I bailed as soon as it was the boyfriend driving me to school thing, because I was just like, I can't get through this. I think like Rachel like posted a picture of the two of them together or something, and she's like the most popular girl in school and blah 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 blah, and then so everyone's like, who's that, and Chloe's like, of course they don't know who I am, like.
See, so I really
is really funny because they showed a school picture and there's literally 10 of them in the class. I'm like, how do you not know who this other person is?
Because she's goth. And she's angry at the world, and no one wants to be around that kind of negativity. Right. But I think the thing that would have it was interesting me for this prequel was the relationship between Rachel and Chloe that we never got to see in the main game. And if they're slowly building to that, surrounded by all the other shit that we know Chloe went through. Yes, you hate your mom's boyfriend. Yes, you hate the fact that your dad died. It's very sad. You hate the fact that you go to this stupid uppity school and the principal likes to drink on the porch. We get it. You don't like your life. However, let's get to the interesting parts that we were actually looking forward to delving into a little bit, which was the relationship between Chloe and Rachel, which made her very happy in a very unhappy part of her life. But if they're like watering that down with, you know, Teenage Simulator 101, like, that's not going
to
appeal
to us. Well, and again, like I said, I've played like maybe 45 minutes to an hour of the game. Like, I literally played through the pre-credit scene, and then I played, there's a little bit of Chloe when she wakes up in the morning and like stuff in her room, and then she goes down and talks to her mom. And so basically, like, at the point when you would be going to school to, you know, to kind of confront Rachel probably, or go say hi or whatever, kick off that friendship. I bailed before that happened because it was just so bad and so painful. But it could, like you said, that the Rachel Chloe dynamic was one that we never got to see. So that could be the interesting part. But the fact that the entire game is from Chloe's perspective, it's like all that potential story goodness is wrapped in this disgusting Chloe package that I don't want to get my hands dirty ripping open.
Do you think, like, who are the people that liked Chloe? I don't want to, like, you know,
color, I don't know.
You know, color people who actually did and then find out they're really nice folks and they just, you know, they just like a little rough edges. But I'm just trying to imagine, like, I only liked her when in small snippets where she was actually just joking around with Max, and Max actually brought her down a level to tolerable.
I think that happened in the first couple of episodes of Life is Strange, and I think that's why we like those episodes the most. I think that once we got to the point where it was basically the Max and Chloe show, and Chloe wasn't really a supporting character anymore, then that's the point when it just got to be a little bit much. So now that they've doubled down on the Chloe, I think that might be where the mistake was made. I don't know. But it's so hard to tell because she is what she is and the story is what it is. So I don't really know how they would go about doing this prequel in any other way. It's just not for me at all.
Yeah, no, I'm probably going to skip it. Just, and you know, unless someone comes to me and says, no, after you get driven to work,
or school, don't listen to Jocelyn.
It becomes the best prequel ever. And it's getting really good reviews, but I have had issues with the way people review these adventure games is that they, because they're bite-sized content, people seem to, like, I think, rate them a little higher. Game of Thrones for Telltale being one of those where it's like, best Telltale episode ever of Game of Thrones. And I'm like, is it really though? It's actually kind of terrible, guys. Like, this is a bad video game. And yeah, I was excited to know that there was a prequel coming out. I'm not excited to find out that it is what I feared it would be, which is a teenage simulator. And I mean, I even went to high school, folks, and I just don't remember people acting like that. I remember time travel.
Maybe
though.
It's because
that was important.
Oh yeah, the time travel definitely.
I happened, do remember that. Sick time, but.
Well, that's probably enough of Life is Strange because we don't want to bring you guys down anymore. We have one more thing to talk about tonight. Sure. I was going to say both Mario and I. Both Ryan and I picked up
Mario. I had no idea that you, like, literally got the big costume man come in and play with you.
Yeah. Well, it's because that's how your email starts. I think that's the association my brain made.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's, you're talking about teenage angst.
Yeah.
Great email in high school. It lives with you forever.
Anyway, so we both picked up Mario and Rabbids this weekend for the Switch. So I didn't get as far probably as you, because basically Matt was playing on the Switch while I was driving. So I got, you know, little bits and pieces here and there, but I didn't have a whole big chunk of time like he did. And like I imagine you did, what with the whole watching the baby sleep thing. But
Paw Patrol as well. Yeah.
I am not a big XCOM fan. Okay. It's not the kind of strategy game, and not that I think XCOM is bad. I think XCOM is an awesome game if you're into that type of genre. It just doesn't necessarily appeal to me. I like other strategy games, but for some reason, just the like positioning, it's the same sort of thing as Fire Emblem. I never really got into Fire Emblem the way you got into Fire Emblem. So that being said, I found the bits of Mario and Rabbids that I played was actually pretty fun, but I don't know, like, it seems not very complicated. Like, it's okay. You have in the notes XCOM light, and I feel like that is a really good way to put it, because I was just like, all of these puzzles, all of this strategy seems incredibly simple, and it wasn't enough to keep me interested.
Yeah, I felt the same way early on when I was playing the game. The first world is very, you know, protracted out. It's very long, and they're introducing new mechanics throughout. And I'd be interested to know, like, you know, there's a skill tree, right, for every character. Did you get that far?
No, I got to the point where I bought weapons.
Okay. So this is the thing, is that the game, like, it's not made by Nintendo, it's made by Ubisoft, but Ubisoft basically made this game as if they were Nintendo developers, in that they took all of the mechanics you would need to know to play the game and spread it out as far as they could, to the point where the first five battles feels a little like, okay, guys, I get it. I've played XCOM. I know how to move my characters. It's really cool.
I think that's about as far as I got. Mm-hmm. And I did think that that was a really cool mechanic, the whole, like, using your teammates to launch you forward and to different places you wouldn't be able to get to otherwise. I thought that kind of brought in a cartoony kind of element that you couldn't do in something like an XCOM, because it's super serious. So if, like, one XCOM character ran up to another XCOM character, they laid down on the ground and boosted them with their feet, that would look ridiculous. But it works in an animated cartoony game like this. So I liked how they kind of used their aesthetic to their advantage that way and actually turned it into a gameplay mechanic. I thought that was really, really cool. But yeah, I got probably through, I want to say like five or six battles, sounds about right. I was definitely in the first world. I was doing battles where there were like multiple levels to the battlefield sort of thing. Like you defeat three or four guys and then you realize, oh, wait, that's not actually the end of the fight. There's more guys waiting for me in like the next stage almost. I got to the point where they introduced like 3D-ness. So like you could go up on the top of hills and stuff. And yeah, and all the movement and stuff like that and different kinds of cover. I did all of that. So I feel like I was probably five or six in. And by the time I was that far in, I was just like, okay, they need to give me a little bit more because this is getting really boring and repetitive.
Yeah. I felt the same way. Again, I'm not trying to sugarcoat it, but I did get to a point where I feel like there was enough added that when it's put all together, it feels really good. It's like a really great sandwich. When you lay everything out in a row and be like, this looks actually really boring on its own if I were to just eat this slice of bologna on its own. But when I put it together into a delicious strategy sandwich and then I eat it strategically with with full cover, because it's going to spray, it's just, it's delicious. You just put too much mustard on there. I don't know. Anyways, I just feel like I want to jump ahead and just say, like, yeah, the game starts off very slow, but that is so Nintendo-like, even to a point where I know you and I have had conversations where with a Nintendo game, you have to play the first 3 hours in order to get to the meat of the game that they're actually trying to give you. For some reason, they feel like
they lose me. I think, is why Splatoon didn't, is because Splatoon, the single player, totally lost me. I played my first, world in Splatoon and kind of went, eh, but then I tried the multiplayer, and multiplayer was freaking fun, and it didn't have any hand-holding or anything else there. I had some issues with multiplayer, but at least the gameplay itself was fun. It kept me coming back to the point that I had, like, 20 hours into Splatoon before you even hit the level to unlock rank play. Like, I was way into that game, so...
But see, this is the thing. The campaign in Splatoon 2 is basically a giant tutorial, which is why you probably fell out of it.
I fell out of it so fast. Yeah. So fast.
Now, again, like, so we talk about Mario plus Rabbids. My favorite thing about the game is the mobility. So
Is it Mario and Rabbids or Mario Rabbids or Mario plus Rabbids? Because, come on.
I don't know. Mario, you could probably call it, it's spelt Mario plus Rabbids. You could call it Mario and Rabbids. You could call it Mario cross Rabbids. There's a lot of, there's the story mechanic is, it is set in the real world where, and I didn't know this, there's this lady who works on goggles that merge things, and she's trying to solve world crises by creating, like, lamps that are made of flowers. Anyways, she, like, leaves the room, and then the rabbits show up in this time, you know, this dishwasher time machine. They warp in, and then they start playing with the device, and they merge a bunch of Mario, because there's a bunch of Nintendo shit all over the... It's like this person took Ryan's room dream and made it a reality in CG. And then they just start merging everything, and then they kind of get sucked back into the dishwasher or the washing machine somehow, time machine. And also pulls in all the Mario stuff, and then that's how you get, like, these mashed together worlds. And it's just,
I love how you say that's how you get these worlds, as if that explained anything at all.
It doesn't explain anything.
Time traveling, like, washing machine that then combined with this weird portal gun makes all the universes the same. Ta-da.
And that portal gun thing, as you know, the rabbit that merges with the headset that merges things, that becomes, you know, your MacGuffin to chase after. That is your, you know, your golden turkey that you're going after. I don't think that's a real thing, but
it's like golden turkey. I've never heard that one before.
It's new. Anyways, it's a ridiculous story made up to be like, we want to take, basically Ubisoft saying, we want to create a Mario game, but we also want to jam our characters in there. So that's how they set it up. But my favorite thing about the game is the mobility, because in XCOM, it's very rigid. Because it's very set in the, you know, quote-unquote real world. Like, if aliens invaded, boom, XCOM. Full cover, you know, you're running. You're not jumping off of anybody. You're just taking cover and you're shooting things. Also laser guns. But in Mario Cross Rabbids, Mario and Rabbids, the mobility is, like, you can choose to shoot. You can choose to do a sub move, some of which you might realize are from the original XCOM, like Hero Sight, which is basically you go into a mode where you if someone moves, you can shoot them on their turn, which is very cool. Or you can move first.
Ooh, and that's like, wasn't it called Overwatch in XCOM 2? Because then I was like, kept talking about Overwatch, and I was like, I like that game. Let's go play that game.
It's definitely called Overwatch. The difference between XCOM and Mario is that in Mario you can activate it every two turns and fire and move, but in XCOM you can only do it if you haven't taken a shot yet, which you know, kind of, I guess, makes sense. If you're not going to shoot your bullets, you might as well save them to shoot them a little later. But yeah, in this game the mobility is really cool in that you can run around and you can slide tackle the enemy, which is where it starts off.
Yeah, I thought that was cool too.
Very cool. And you can actually, your mobility is way open. And it kind of feels a little OP once you start chaining things together, but the enemies can do it as well. So you can like run up, slide tackle, run all the way back to where you came from, or reposition to get other cover, or you can slide tackle, then use a teammate jump to go up to higher ground and then shoot. Or if you're Mario, once you unlock the skill tree, so every character has a unique skill tree with a bunch of powers you can put orbs into, is what they're called, and you can actually run up, slide tackle, jump off someone, bonk someone on the head, jump again, and then go to cover, and then shoot those fools. It's the way you can chain things together is super satisfying.
But you enemies can do it too, right?
Enemies can do it too, and just like your characters, there are only certain enemy or certain characters and enemies that can do the Mario jump and jump on people's heads. Mm-hmm. And early on in the game, there are very basic enemies. Again, like the first five battles are just trying to get you started. By the time you get to the end of the first world, you've kind of experienced the normal type of stuff that's going to pop up in every battle afterwards, like the mobility and the different types of enemies. So there are different enemies where there's the berserkers that are just these big hulking guys with slabs of stone or ice, and they beeline it for someone and then they smash them, and you can kind of kite them around by shooting them around and kind of say, okay, I'm going to put Luigi over here and shoot them so he walks that way, and then have Mario shoot them so he comes back this way. And that's really cool, and they keep adding on those little mechanics, new enemies. They're always introducing new enemies, new mechanics. I just played a level where they introduced weather mechanics, but in a totally Mario style, where it's just this tornado that swirps up, and then every turn it gets a turn, and it can kind of like, it moves with the weather vanes that are on the map.
That's pretty cool. I like, you know, hazards.
Yeah, hazards is the best way to put it. And again, they just keep adding to it. And the fact that we were talking, you know, before the show, I had asked who had picked it up, because I know you weren't, you know, super keen on it. But it is a Switch title. It's one of the very few Switch-exclusive games that have come out. It's probably the only release in August that was actually big and worth picking up. A lot of people are probably looking at this as like, do I pick this up, or do I wait until November or October when Mario comes out? And I really do feel like if you couldn't get into XCOM, but you like the idea of a strategy game, this game actually provides that stopgap, that sort of like middle ground for you, where it's not super strategic, but it's also, it eventually gets to a point where it doesn't feel handholdy, you know, where you're just trying to get through it to the next cutscene. Like,
well, the one thing that I will 100% say is that this is probably the first one that feels, at least to me, like it was designed more for the handheld than it was for the console. Like, this feels like something I had no problems whatsoever playing in the car on the go with the Switch, versus like Zelda, which was so difficult. Those Divine Beasts, I've said it before, were really, really hard to do in the handheld mode. But Mario plus Rabbids seems super, super easy and intuitive, and like it was made to be a mobile game, which I don't say as like a bad thing. Like, I think it's a really good thing. I think Nintendo, in order to make the Switch really catch on, they need to make titles like this that don't feel like a scaled down version of a console title, but feel almost like a more complicated mobile title, if that makes sense. Like, they need to scale up mobile instead of scaling down console.
Yeah, I agree. And I have been playing a lot in handheld mode. And usually when I do that, I feel like I'm getting the half experience with the Switch, you know, having played Splatoon, having played Zelda. And with this, I really do feel like you're getting the same experience, which is what the Switch was trying to sell everybody on. It's like, no, when you take it out of the docked mode, you are getting the same game. And this is the first time that it really feels like I'm getting... with the other ones, it's the same game, but this feels like the same experience. Like, I'm not hindered by the fact that I'm playing on a small screen, because it is
exactly
the game plays to that strength, where you have the camera and you can zoom out and you can do the tactics view. And the other thing that you probably noticed is that we're talking a lot about the strategy stuff. There's also the exploration side of it. And my gosh, you must have been just crying tears of boredom with that stuff, because that is so lame early on.
It's yeah, I was gonna say, it's to the point that I didn't even think it was worth mentioning, because it basically just feels like you're walking your character down
the
little pathways that connect the levels. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I will say, though, as it gets going, it doesn't, you know, suddenly become the best thing in the world, but it does get to the point where there's more to it. There's some puzzle solving.
Do you feel like, I was going to say, my biggest kind of question with that whole exploration part mm-hmm. of the game is, when you find the secrets, do they feel like secrets? Because right now, it felt like when I was walking around, I would just come around a corner and there'd be a treasure chest. Or like I'd walk up to this giant cannon in the middle of somewhere and then go, I wonder where this goes. Oh, what do you know? A treasure chest. Okay, better go back now. Like, does it feel more along the lines of like, I'm not just an idiot walking face first into a treasure chest? Does it feel like you earn it?
You do. Yeah, there are certainly some ones later on where you have to solve specific puzzles, you know, going out of your way to solve the puzzle to get the treasure chest. And then there are also like sort of Metroid mechanics where you eventually unlock powers for whatever the Roomba's name is. And you can actually go back to the world and it's like, oh, I unlocked the drill, you know, mechanic. So I can go back and do those little puzzles that I saw before but weren't mm-hmm. able to do. So there is some advanced little trinkets to find in the exploration mode. But I'm not saying the exploration mode suddenly becomes as good as the strategy layer with the combat. Mm-hmm. But it does get better in that it just feels like they've put more into it. And again, if there's one negative to this game, it's that it starts so slow. And yeah, you have to kind of just take yourself through it. And if you're going to drop $80 on this game, or you're borrowing it from a friend or whatever, like, you owe it to yourself to kind of get to the next stage of the gameplay. And once you unlock, I'd say you get, you know, Rabid Luigi, you get a full party and you start experimenting with other, you know, characters that you find along the way. Like, I've got probably 5 or 6 people in my party now, and there's a boss, you know, they introduce boss characters that you have to fight. And it's just a really, really well put together game. Like, you, if you looked at this, you wouldn't know it was made by Ubisoft. You would swear that this is a Nintendo game, outside of the fact that Mario has a freaking gun and that the rabbits are kicking around.
That was a little bit odd, I will say. Like, I mean, just Mario having, which I guess he kind of did in Mario Sunshine. He had
shot
the hose.
Water. I mean, he was cleaning.
Shot water. Yeah, I guess so. But yeah, it was to see him actually be like, ha ha!
I'm going to get you!
Yeah!
I'm full cover. I'm going to shoot you. Like, it just looks so weird. And
it is a little weird, I think.
But the animations are just so well done. Like, the way like Luigi cowers behind half cover, mm-hmm. you know damn well he's scared, because that's Luigi and he does not like half cover. But yeah, it's delightful. And I think if you love XCOM and you're worried this is going to be like baby XCOM, it is a little bit. But you know what? What's the harm in playing something a little more simplistic and just enjoying yourself every once in a while? Like, XCOM is brutal.
Ryan, you do realize that is like the argument that you give for 90% of Nintendo games?
Sometimes it's nice to just lay back and have fun, unlike getting trounced by every other game that just thinks hard is like the best thing in the world. It's not really. But no, like, this is actually, this, I know I say that a lot, but this is actually one of those times where it makes a
you
lot
really
of sense
mean
to
it.
Say it. And I really mean it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Well, we're going to take a moment here before we dive into our topic of the week this week to thank our patrons. You can go to patreon.com/thegamersin if you would like to support the show. We have next week, I believe, is our... Nope. The week after. So September 21st will be our Gamers In game night, so make sure you guys are checking out the Patreon for that. There will be a post, as well as you can check out our Discord. It's bit.ly/TGI Discord to join in the conversation there and make recommendations for what you guys want us to play, what you want us to cover, give us your thoughts on whatever you're playing right now. You can do all that over on the TGI Discord. We also have a patron ad this week from The Geek Review. The Geek Review is a podcast that reviews everything and anything. For an honest consumer review, The Geek Review can be found on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Discord, and at thegeekreview.podbean.com. Our topic of the week this week is DLC for charity, yay or nay? And this has been kicked off by Warner Brothers essentially offering a DLC to benefit their executive producer of Shadows of Mordor, unfortunately passed away last year of cancer. So they are giving a piece of $5 DLC. They basically put him in the game as a champion who shows up to help your heroes at various points during the game. They kind of took his likeness and made him a giant warrior or killer guy. And so it's $5 to add him to the game. $3.50 of that is going to go to his family. And so good, bad, or ugly, Ryan.
Mm. Yeah. The way that this is originally set up sounds very nice and very awesome. And you can imagine someone who worked on a series as long as this person did, Michael Forgey, to have him now in the game immortalized, which happens a lot across video games. Happens a lot in Warcraft, World of Warcraft.
Well, yeah, I mean, we actually, AIE actually has an annual memorial that we do in August where we go to the Shrine of the Fallen Soldier in just outside of Orgrimmar. And it is a shrine to someone who worked on World of Warcraft who passed away too early, and so the Shrine of the Fallen Warrior is where we go to pay our respects to the guildmates that we have lost throughout the year.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, there are examples of this all over the place of, you know, video game companies putting memorials in game. Warner Brothers is definitely not the first one to do that. I would say this is the first time that I've heard of a company charging for a memorial in game.
Yeah, that's the sticky point. And then Cinderflame in the chat room is also saying there was a little bit of confusion when this originally came out, saying like, well, the fine print says only certain states and only the US would have that money going to the family. And now Warner Brothers has come out saying that no, we will see no profits from the sales of this game. Now that could mean a bunch of different things. Who really knows? But in my mind, if a developer is going to go out and charge for this for the specific reason of, you know, donating to the family, I don't think we get upset at Warner Brothers. I think this is actually a really cool thing to benefit a family that is suffering from, the death of a father. I think a father of three. Mm-hmm. I read the page. And you know, some might argue like, well, maybe it should go to just a cancer relief in general or whatever. I don't think it matters where the money goes as long as it goes to someone that needs the benefit. But where it really comes down to is like, if we're going to be upset at someone, let's look at the numbers here. It's $5 DLC. Only $3.50 is going to the charity. Where's the other $1.50 going? Well, it's going into Steam, Microsoft, and Sony's pockets. Why aren't anybody kind of complaining about them? Because everybody's shitting on Warner Brothers just because they're going to put loot boxes in whatever this Shadow of War. But like, no one's talking about how Steam and Microsoft and Sony are going to take a cut on this DLC. Like, I think we need to, you know, look at this and pick our battles here. Like, I think
that you're right. I think my first kind of I guess it's kind of tough because if you want to actually benefit the families, then you do have to charge money for that.
Yeah.
But I think what you could do is you could put the character in the game, period. And you could say, like, even inside the game, like, because they all have, like, character descriptions and all this kind of stuff that they put into games like this where they tell us more about the characters and whatever. Put right in that when you're looking at the character in the journal or the whatever, say this is a memorial to our executive producer who passed away. If you want to support the family, go to blah, blah, blah. Because I've seen if you go to the family's, it's not a GoFundMe page, but it's a similar like charity page, basically. Yeah. It was originally set up to help pay for his treatment. And then he unfortunately passed away. So now it's still there as a way to donate to the family. But I've seen a lot of people go and donate in the last few days, just straight up $5 to the family, which I think is great. So I think that shows that gamers would just go and donate to the family when they're made aware of it, because there were a lot of people posting and saying, like, here's the $5 I would have given to Warner Brothers. I don't want to. I would rather the whole $5 just go straight to you. So I feel like gamers in general, and we run Extra Life every year, they're very generous people with their time and their money. So I feel like just making people aware, like using this as an awareness campaign, might have actually been better than making it a paid DLC. Like, put it in everybody's game, tell everyone how awesome this guy was and make him a character like they have, where he comes in and randomly saves you at different points in the game. Like, that is an awesome way to remember somebody who seems to have the personality traits that this guy seemed to have. So I think if you used it as an awareness campaign, that it actually would have been a lot better received, because right now it's being received basically like a money grab. And like you said, it doesn't seem to be Warner Brothers who is profiting, but yeah, it seems to be the kind of in between, the middleman who's profiting, right? Because your Steams, your Microsofts, your Sonys, whoever it is that has the store, they're the ones taking the cut that then is not going to the family.
Yeah, and Cinderflame in the chat room is saying that there is still some confusion out there about whether certain states and internationally will actually be contributing to charity. I don't know. That's a really good point. The article doesn't really clear it up. It just says that Warner Brothers will not profit from any sales of the DLC. Yeah,
that was the quote-unquote clarification, is that the Warner Brothers isn't going to profit.
But does that mean, is it going to charity? You'd think if it was going to charity, they would say that, right? Mm-hmm. So, again,
they haven't been upfront 100%, like, no, with how exactly all of this is going to go. So, basically, what they've said is, like, Warner Brothers and their affiliates that are involved in this game are not getting any money from any sales. Mm. But then that does stand to reason that if there is something legally from donating to a charity that is making it so that they can't, with funds from certain states or from, you know, across borders, which sometimes, regardless of how you do it, sometimes when you're raising money for charity, that is a real issue. Money passing across borders, even though everyone's got PayPal now and it seems real easy, it's not necessarily, when there are international laws governing these kind of things. Donating to charities in other countries can sometimes lead to issues. So, all that being said, basically all we need from them then is to say something along the lines of, if the money can't go directly to Michael, it was Michael, right? Michael's family, then at least it will go to a cancer charity in your country of origin. You know, something like that, you know, just to say exactly what's going to happen if you don't fall into some of these states or if you are international. Which, because be it could simple. Even be if they are donating through whatever, because I have never actually even heard of this website that the family has been using. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to find the name of it.
You Caring?
It's called You Caring. So I've never actually even heard of that, but it could even be as simple as that, you know, the Warner Brothers are going to donate through that site and that site doesn't allow things like. Who knows? But yeah, exactly. It doesn't really answer exactly what's going to happen to the funds that are coming from outside of the U.S. and from some states even within the U.S. So I think you need answers to that before you go and buy the DLC. If the reason that you want the DLC is to support the family, if all you want to do is support the family, the best way to do that 100% is going to be going to that funding page.
Yeah, and you can kind
of... End of story.
Well, that would be, like, with anything, like, with a Kickstarter, if you just want to support the artist, like, you just give them the money. Or Patreon's a better example. If you just want to support the artist, you just do a PayPal donation, or literally walk up to them and give them $20. That's the easiest way for you to have all your money go to the person, because these days, everybody's taking a cut. And, I mean, if you look at this donation page, it's like, I really dislike how bitter gamers are.
That is true, like, I mean, it's nice that the family is getting the benefit of this because, like I said, there are a bunch of people now who are going in and saying, here's the full $5 that I would have given to Warner Brothers for the DLC, but you deserve all of it. I'm not going to get the DLC, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of very angry, very negative spin in a lot of those messages, and that's got to be kind of hard for the family too, right? Well, like,
they probably worked with Warner Brothers and Monolith to do this. Like, this, it's not like Warner Brothers is like, I'm going to make some money.
By all accounts, this guy loved his job, right? So it's, you know, a very good chance that, you know, the family probably has, and they seem to have taken good care of him, and it's a nice idea to put a memorial in the game. So they've got to have mixed feelings about this, I think, and that's something that we should always kind of have a little bit of empathy and compassion for, is, you know, the family involved are victims, and, you know, we need to keep that in mind, I think, when making a stand of any kind. This obviously isn't a political stance, but I feel like it's in the same vein, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you're taking somebody's tragedy and you're trying to make a statement about, you know, corporations being greedy.
Yeah.
maybe this isn't the time or the place. Maybe you could just donate $5 and say, we're sorry that you lost your son, father, husband.
Well, this is a person's likeness that they're using, and they're out there saying, this is, we're doing this for this person. They would have needed permission from the family. So they don't need to go to the gamers for your permission to do this. They went to the right person to get permission to do this. Like, if they hadn't done that, then you can get your pitchforks and your torches. And yeah, going back to the comment of like, if you want to just go donate, you can do that without dredging up this like weird internet controversy. There'll be something else that comes up next week that Reddit can get upset with. But right now, this is what everyone's dealing with. And I agree, it's not perfect. I am defending Warner Brothers, but I'm not saying that it's perfect. Like, their even their PR spin, as Cinderflame is saying, like, it just seems like not the greatest way to do it. And yeah, they could have done that. But you know what? Their You Caring page is probably getting an influx of donations thanks to the fact that, you know, Warner Brothers and Monolith and Shadow of War and all that stuff has actually put this out there. They're making a difference in their own way, and maybe they didn't do it in a way that made everybody happy, but it's kind of hard to do that these days. And I think this is them trying to do something different and unique that would have directly benefited the family, and they got shit on for it, which it means this probably won't happen again, because it's like, well, no, we can't touch that one, you know, because that happened to Monolith and they just never recovered from it because of the internet, you know. I just why can't it be a positive thing, you know?
The takeaway from this is that trying to memorialize someone who video games meant a whole lot to, I think, is a really wonderful thing. And we've seen it happen a lot in Warcraft. I'm just using Warcraft.
It's a good example.
As an example, because that's the one I'm the most familiar with is, you know, what Blizzard's done. And I think that they've done a lot of like nods to real life people in their games. They've memorialized people in a lot of different ways, and you never have to pay for it. And that's great. But I think that, you know, like, even the stuff that you do have to pay for with Blizzard, because I know I've seen that argument too, is that, you know, Blizzard gave 100% of their charity pets this year to the charity. But again, they're using 100% of their own stores and their own platforms, and they don't pay any money to anybody because you buy everything through Battle.net. So they don't have any extra costs like some of these other game companies do. So, I mean, like, I agree that we need more information, but at the same time, like, memorials of people in games are good. So I'm going to generally fall on that side of things.
It would be unfortunate that they had to go out there with the legal mumbo jumbo saying that, hey, possibly your reason for buying this may not actually happen, in which, you can go to the donation page and donate $5 and get the DLC. There's no shame in that. I mean, work was put into this, and a good portion of, you know, their market is in the States. So a lot of that is going to go to charity. But it's just, I think it's a company trying to do something good in their own way, and it just not being, you know, perfect, you know, because there is no perfect way to do it. Someone has passed away and the team is mourning, and they wanted to do something for their, you know, their executive producer. I truly believe that. I don't think that everybody's out to just make a quick buck and
to capitalize.
And some people in chat are saying that, there are other issues to not want to pay for this game, but like, I loved Shadow of Mordor, and I'm excited about Shadow of War, and guess what? Loot boxes are here to stay. Why doesn't anybody shit on Overwatch for loot boxes or any other Blizzard games that exists?
I shit on Heroes for loot boxes.
I know, like, it's just, loot boxes are here to stay. They're a thing.
It's a thing now,
And I heard a really good example. This is jumping out, but quickly, I've heard a really good example about loot boxes than that. Why would you pay more money to play less of the game? You know, loot boxes in Shadow of War, I don't really understand how they work, but basically it's like you pay money to skip ahead in a game that has no competitive advantage. You're just playing less of the game by paying more money. Does that make any sense to you? No. Don't buy the loot boxes. Like, it's not the end of the world that a company has said, hey, we spent millions of dollars on this, we're going to put in something else for those, you know, accountants that are too busy to play our game and they want to like skip to the end with these loot boxes. We're going to do it. It takes, you know, a little extra time. We'll make some money. People will hate us for it because it's the internet. I just don't buy the fucking loot boxes. It's not that difficult. I don't get it. Or buy them. I don't care. Just don't complain about it.
Oh, man. On that note,
yeah.
Thank you for that, Ryan. We have another patron ad this week from Simon, who says, Weekly News Desk is a podcast all about the geek news this week. Join your two Knucklehead hosts, Andrew and Simon, as they keep you informed on movies, TV, video games, and books. Find them on iTunes or at weeklynews.com. That's going to do it for us tonight. Thank you guys so much for hanging out live in the chat room. You make it so much better and give us some jumping off points that we may not have thought of otherwise. So we just want to take a moment and thank you guys for being here with us on twitch.tv/amovetv. A reminder, everyone, we record live at 8 p.m. Eastern every Wednesday night. You can visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com. You can also find us on amovetv along with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, The Angry Chicken. There's a lot of anger on Amove, apparently. For Azeroth, Embrace the Spoilers, and Heroes Forge. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at Joss Plays. Ryan is at R. Murphy. And don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on youtube.com/AMOVETV. If you'd like to email us and tell us how wrong we are about charity DLC, please do so at info@gamersinpodcast.com. Thanks for staying at The Gamers Inn. Remember, tune in next week. Bye, guys.
Bye, everyone.